All right, everybody, welcome back. We're going to be jumping into another one of these discussions about biblical text. And today, we're looking at 2 Kings.
Decking Tings.
And as always, we're coming at this from an academic perspective. We're looking at this as kind of a historical text. Just kind of seeing what we can glean from it.
And a lot of people are interested in history, and a lot of people are interested in critical thinking, and a lot of people are interested in religious texts. So we think it's really valuable to look at these things, kind of unpack them, and see what's in there.
Absolutely. And I think 2 Kings is full of a lot of stuff that's going to be really interesting to unpack. So 2 Kings is a continuation of 1 Kings. And it covers another 300 years of the history of Israel and Judah.
So we're talking about the divided kingdoms at this point. The kingdom has split in two, and we're seeing the stories of these two kingdoms as they're interacting with each other, as they're interacting with other nations, and as they're interacting with God.
And it's a wild ride. I mean, we've got Elijah ascending into heaven in a whirlwind.
In a
We've
whirlwind.
got all kinds of
Right.
wars and intrigue
Yeah, we
and
got King Cooks doing all sorts of crazy things. And it's definitely a very dramatic book.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the themes that runs throughout 2 Kings is this idea of divine retribution. Basically, that if kings followed God's laws, then things would go well for them and their kingdoms would prosper. And if they disobeyed God's laws, then they would face consequences.
And this idea of divine retribution, it's central to the whole book, but it's something that can be a little bit tricky to grapple with from our modern perspective.
Oh, absolutely. And especially when you see some of the things that some of these kings are getting away with.
Well, right. Like, for instance, King Ahaz, we see that he offered his own son as a sacrifice, which from our perspective today is like a horrific act, but there's no mention in the text of him facing any kind of divine consequences for that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's not just him. I mean, you see other kings who are doing all sorts of things that you would think would bring down God's wrath, but it doesn't always seem to happen.
And then you contrast that with other kings who were punished for what seemed to be relatively minor infractions, or even sometimes it seems like they're being punished for the actions of their predecessors.
Right. And that brings up another issue, which is the idea of collective punishment, where a whole nation is punished for the actions of its leader, which is something that we would probably have some ethical problems with today.
I mean, we tend to think about justice being individual. You're responsible for your own actions. But in the world of Second Kings, it's very much a communal kind of justice. The whole nation is seen as bearing the responsibility for the actions of its king.
And that plays out in some pretty dramatic ways throughout the text. Like when we see entire kingdoms being conquered and people being exiled because of the actions of their leaders. But it's not all doom and gloom. In 2 Kings, we've also got these amazing miracles that are happening. Like Elisha multiplying the loaves of bread to feed a multitude, or even bringing a child back from the dead.
Yeah, those are definitely some
Yeah.
eye-catching stories. And for the people who were reading these stories back then, these miracles would have been seen as evidence of God's power and God's presence in their lives.
Yeah, and I imagine they would have been. Pretty inspiring stories for them to hear and to pass down. But for us looking at it today with our modern scientific perspective, it can be hard to reconcile those accounts with our understanding of how the world works.
I mean, obviously, we know today that you can't just multiply loaves of bread or bring someone back from the dead. But I think it's important to remember that the people who wrote these stories, they were living in a very different world than we are. They understood the world in a different way. And these miracles, they were meant to convey deeper truths about their faith and their understanding of God.
Right. And so it's not necessarily about taking those stories literally, but looking at the message behind them and what they tell us about the beliefs and the values of the people who wrote them.
It's
And I
exact.
think that's a
I agree with you.
valuable way to approach a lot of these ancient texts because we just dismiss them as, made up stories or fairy tales. Then we miss out on a lot of the richness and complexity that they have to offer.
And we also have to remember that, even though these stories might seem fantastical to us, they were very real to the people who believed them, and they had a profound impact on their lives and their culture.
Absolutely. And that's why it's important too, to approach them with respect and to try to understand them on their own terms. But of course, we also can't ignore the fact that there are some historical inconsistencies in 2 Kings, the timeline of kings and events sometimes clashes with what we know from archaeology.
Right, there are definitely some places where the biblical account doesn't quite line up with what we've learned from other sources. Like, for example, 2 Kings tells us that the northern kingdom of Israel fell in 722 BCE.
Right.
But archaeological findings from the city of Dan, which was a major Israelite city, suggest that it might have fallen several years earlier than that.
It's interesting. And so how do we reconcile those kinds of discrepancies?
Well, I think it's important to remember that the Bible, it's not a history textbook in the modern sense. It wasn't written with the same standards of accuracy and objectivity that we would expect today.
Right. It's a collection of texts that were written and compiled over a long period of time.
Exactly.
With different authors and potentially different agendas.
Right. So it's possible that the biblical authors, they might have shaped the timeline of events to fit their own theological or political purposes.
And so as readers today, we have to be aware of those possibilities and take them into account when we're interpreting the text.
Right. And I think that's where critical thinking comes in. We can't just accept everything we read in the Bible at face value. We have to ask questions. We have to compare different sources, and we have to be willing to acknowledge that there might be multiple interpretations of the same events.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes studying these ancient texts so fascinating, is that they challenge us to think critically and to wrestle with big questions about history and faith and culture.
Absolutely.
And speaking of challenging questions, one thing that always stands out to me about 2 Kings is the portrayal of God.
Yeah, he's a pretty intense God in this book.
Yeah, he's very much a God of strict laws and swift punishment, which is quite a contrast to the emphasis on love and forgiveness that we often see in the New Testament.
Right, and that difference in portrayal, I think it highlights how religious ideas evolve and adapt over time. The understanding of God wasn't static. It was shaped by the experiences and the beliefs of different communities at different points in history.
And so we can see how those changing understandings of God are reflected in the different texts that make up the Bible.
Certainly.
So we've got divine retribution with awe-inspiring miracles, historical inconsistencies, and a complex portrayal of God that's evolved over time. What are we supposed to make of 2 Kings? What's the takeaway for someone engaging with it today?
Well, I think the most important thing is to approach it with a critical and discerning eye. We need to understand the historical context, the cultural lens of the authors, and the potential for multiple interpretations.
Right. And I think it's also important to remember that these ancient texts, they still have something to say to us today, even if we don't agree with everything they say or interpret them in the same way that people did thousands of years ago.
Yeah, they can still challenge us. They can still inspire us. And they can still help us to understand ourselves and the world around us better.
So as you go about your day, think about this. How do you reconcile these ancient beliefs with our modern understanding of the world? And what value do you find in exploring historical religious texts, even if you don't subscribe to the specific faith that they represent? And we'll be back next week with another one of these discussions. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.